ours will be forever the method.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen, and happy new year, 2022. We are in the new year. So welcome everybody to the new year of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. On this episode of the podcast, we are going to have part two of our interview with Jerry Branham, where we are reviewing the year 1971. If you're new to the podcast, what we typically do at the end of each year is we go back 50 years, 40 years, and 30 years and talk about what happened during that year 50 years ago, 40 years ago, and 30 years ago. Instead of talking about 2021, we are going to be talking about 1971. We're going 50 years back. So in part one of our interview with Jerry Branham, we talked about the AAU Mr. America in 1971, which was an historic event because Casey Viator won that show at only 19 years old. And then we also covered the IFBB Mr. America, the IFBB Mr. America contest in 1971, which was won by Ken Waller. And also the 1971 IFBB Mr. USA and Mr. World, which was won respectively by Ed Corney and Franco Colombo. Now today on part two of our interview about 1971 with Jerry Branham, we are going to talk about probably the two biggest events that happened that year. The first one was the NABBA Mr. Universe over in London, where Bill Pearl won his fourth and final Mr. Universe contest, and he beat out Sergio Oliva and Reg Park and Frank Zane. So that was a very historic event, one of the most significant NABBA Mr. Universe contests ever to take place. And then one week later, they had the Mr. Olympia contest in Paris, France. It was promoted by Serge Nubre. Arnold Schwarzenegger won his second Mr. Olympia contest, and he won it unopposed. There was no competition, and the reason for that was because Sergio Oliva, who had won the Mr. Olympia for 3 years, and then Arnold had dethroned him in 1970, Sergio Oliva was suspended from competing in the Mr. Olympia contest because he had went over to London and competed in the NABBA Universe. So we're going to talk about that as well. Two huge events that took place. And we're also going to cover the 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe, which was held that same night as the Mr. Olympia in Paris, France. And that was won by Albert Beckles. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation, plus they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. And at the end of our interview with Jerry Branham, I'm going to read two articles. The first one is about the NABBA Mr. Universe 1971, and it comes from the January 1972 issue of Muscular Development magazine. Back then, Muscular Development magazine and Strength and Health magazine were owned by the Hoffman organization, and they would cover all the AAU competitions as well as the NABBA competitions. I looked at my old Muscle Builders. I couldn't find a report on the 1971 NABBA Mr. Universe in Muscle Builder, which was typical for that time because usually Muscle Builder would just cover the IFBB events. So after I read that article, I am going to read an article from the April 1972 issue of Muscle Builder, and this one will be about the 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe and the IFBB Mr. Olympia. So the NABBA Universe article is kind of short, and the Mr. Olympia contest report from Muscle Builder is a little bit longer. So I'll read both of those as soon as we get done talking to Jerry Branum. All right. And I do want to mention off the bat, Jerry has a newsletter. If you guys have not subscribed to it, you want to check it out. It's at appliedmetabolics.com. It's I think it's $10 a month. It comes out once a month, and it's a huge newsletter. Jerry really puts a lot of work into it, and he is such a good friend of the show. I did want to mention that right away, so people will get that news about his newsletter. You might want to check that out and subscribe to it. All right, what else is going on? Well, we got the new year coming. I guess this Omicron virus is really taking off. I know a lot of people out here in Florida are getting sick. I just got back from Chicago. I was out there for the holidays, and I got back right before the new year. And people are really freaking out about this new virus. So be careful out there, guys. I hope I just heard from one of my clients. I'm training people at ProPhysique.com. I'm doing online training. And one of my clients who lives in Canada said they are closing down all the gyms out there on Wednesday. So he has to switch all of his workouts to a home gym workout because the gyms will be closed indefinitely starting on Wednesday. So, man, I feel for those guys. It seems like this thing's never going to end, but going on for 2 years now, and we are still going through it. My training is back on track. I just started training actually the week of Christmas. Was that my life? No, that was my first week back, because I went light the week before, my deload week. So now I'm back to training on my power cycle again. I gained about 10 pounds after my photo shoot. So I'm going to try and stay right around this weight. I'm about 205. I'm going to try and stay at this weight with a 34-inch waist and stay lean and see how that works. My strength is pretty good so far, and I'm able to eat a lot more calories than I was eating when I was dieting. So this is like a unique situation your body gets in when you're lean. And then you just try to eat a little bit more and stay lean. So the key is to stay lean and not blow it and get fat. So that's where the discipline takes over. So I'm going to try that for, like I said, the next 6 months and see how it goes. So I will keep you guys informed on that, kind of experimenting with my body here at the ripe old age of 58. And I'll see what happens, see if I can make some changes. And then I'm going to probably diet again in the summer, in the middle of the summer, like July, and see if my weight goes up from there. So we'll see. I'm working on a podcast to a tribute to Chris Dickerson for one of our podcasts. So Boyer Coe said he would join us. Roy Callender said he would join us. And Chris's good friend from Florida, Bill Nealon, is going to join us. So just got to get everybody together and figure out a date when we can all sit down. But hopefully that'll take place next week. So I will have that for you guys in the next couple of weeks. So I think that'll be a good podcast, and Chris deserves it. And maybe we could also talk a little bit about Dave Draper, too, because we never did a podcast about him. So I'm working on that. So keep your fingers crossed. I think that's all I got, because we did not have any emails. So if you guys, again, if you want to email me, it's at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I love getting your emails, so email those out to me. All right. So without any further ado, here is our interview with Mr. Jerry Branum. He was a former writer for Muscle and Fitness Magazine, and he was also a writer for Iron Man Magazine for many years. Jerry is very well versed on a lot of topics in bodybuilding, including nutrition. But the reason we love having him on this show is because he was around during these times in the 1960s and 70s, and he was living in California, and he knew a lot of the bodybuilders back then. He's got a lot of great stories to share. So here is our part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, where we review the year 1971. And we talk about the NABBA Mr. Universe and then the IFBB Mr. Olympia. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We got part two of our interview now, where we're going to talk about the year 1971, because we're going back 50 years. And this is what we do for our end of the wrap up show, end of the year wrap up. We do this every year with our guest here, Jerry Branum. And so, Jerry, last time we talked about all the amateur shows from 1971, including, of course, the AU Mr. America, where Casey Viator won at only 19 years old. And then we also talked about the IFBB Mr. America, the IFBB Mr. World, and the IFBB Mr. USA. So now we're going to talk about the really two big events of 1971. And when you think about 1971, there was two contests that most people talk about, besides Casey winning the America, which was, of course, was a big event also. But the big event was Bill Pearl coming back and winning his last contest, which was the 1971 NABBA Universe. And like 1 week later, they had the Mr. Olympia in Paris, France that Serge Nubret promoted, and Arnold won that one. That was his second Mr. Olympia. And people were expecting the big rematch between Arnold and Sergio, because Sergio beat Arnold in 69, Arnold beat Sergio in 70, and it never came to be because Sergio was suspended from the show. And Arnold is the only guy besides Sergio to ever win Mr. Olympia with no competition, unopposed.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that NABBA Universe first, because that was the big one. So the story I heard was that Bill Pearl, 1 year earlier, Iron Man magazine was a big magazine back then, and he wrote an article, or he took out a notice in the magazine. He said, I'm challenging all the bodybuilders. Next year, 1971, is going to be my last competition ever. It's going to be the NABBA Mr. Universe. I'm going to be 40, 41 years old, and I'm challenging everybody to come and beat me to try to win that contest. And so Bill Pearl competed, and he won that show. He beat out Reg Park, Sergio, and Frank Zane, and there was supposed to be Arnold, but of course Arnold couldn't show up.
Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, Weider in the magazines had basically said that Bill Pearl was afraid to compete against Arnold. And, you know, I actually spoke to Bill Pearl before that universe. I went up to his gym in Pasadena, and what he told me, he goes, remember, he had already won, I believe, if I remember correctly, three other Mr. Universe
countries. Three, right.
Mm-hmm. He won in 53, 61, and 67.
You got it.
Huh. He won the amateur in 53, the other were the pro titles, right?
Right.
He was a 53 Mr. America. And coincidentally, today, he's the oldest living Mr. America at 91.
Yes.
Years old. But I, he said to me that, you know, because he had recently opened up this gym in Pasadena, right? Because he had previously had a gym in Los Angeles on Manchester Boulevard.
Right.
And I remember him telling me that the main reason why he was competing, and he didn't care about the title at all. He said the main reason, and he also didn't care. I said, what about Arnold and all these guys, you know, not Arnold saying this, but the magazines, they're saying that all these newer guys like Arnold could beat you and stuff like that. He says he couldn't care less. He wasn't impressed by that. He said the reason he was competing, this surprised me, was to publicize his gym.
Yeah.
New gym. He says, I'm completing. This is one of the times, this particular show, I'm competing purely for business reasons. I'm not trying to prove anything, he goes. Wow. Later on, they tried to say that he entered to prove his superiority over Sergio and Reg Park and all those other guys. But the truth is, that's not why he competed. He competed because he wanted to win one more title to kind of publicize his new gym. That was the reason he competed.
I heard that's why he did the other shows too, the other Mr. Universes. I heard every time he had a gym, because he would only compete like once every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It was always to publicize a gym.
That's probably true. And let me see, in 53, I think when he won the first universe, let me think.
That was the year he won the America too.
He won the America. He was, I don't know if he had opened his gym, because his first gym was in Sacramento, California, Northern California.
Yeah, he was only 23 that year. So.
Yeah, I think he was still in the Navy back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was training at Leo Stern's gym in San Diego. Leo was kind of his trainer and his mentor, right?
He probably did that at Universe just because he won the America, you know.
Yeah. And the thing is that I remember at the 53 America, the funny story was you know, he competed, he won that contest, and he beat a guy from who competed from Scotland, who competed under the name of Tom Connery.
Oh, yeah, I know you're going to Sean Connery.
who a couple of years later became famous as Sean Connery, Agent 007.
right.
And what's hilarious about it is that Sean Connery was on the Tonight Show 1 year talking to Johnny Carson. And Johnny Carson said, well, I heard you were once a bodybuilder. So Sean Connery says, he says, I entered the Miss Universe contest in London. He says, I think he said he placed third, but he didn't. He didn't place at all.
Right.
And Sean Connery says to Johnny Carson, he says, yeah, I was beaten by a black guy. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I'm thinking to myself, Bill Pearl won that show. Right. And then I realized why Sean Connery said that. Bill Pearl, he admitted it years later, but Bill Pearl was largely Native American.
Yeah.
You know, he was of Native American descent mostly, you know, with a couple of European things mixed in, including Scottish, but he's mostly Native American. And, you know, he was one of those guys where he'd get very dark when he'd go in the sun.
Yeah, really dark. Yeah.
Very dark. If you see photos of him in competition, he was had the darkest tan of anybody in the show.
Bronze, yeah.
Very, very dark. And that wasn't makeup. That was his skin color.
Wow, really? That's crazy.
Sean Connery, then Tom Connery, so, Bill Pearl was so dark. He was, you know, typical English white guy, pale.
Yeah.
He thought Bill Pearl was a black man.
Right.
You know, he didn't even know that. That was a hilarious situation. But, you know, you could be right because, let me see, by 61, I think he, I don't know if he had the gym. Yeah, he probably had the gym in Sacramento. Yeah, he did have the gym in Sacramento.
But, okay.
Yeah, because I know he trained for that show, the 61 NABBA. Not only did he train himself, but he also got a guy named Ray Rutledge. Mm-hmm. Ray Rutledge had won the 61 Mr. America. No, was it 61? Yeah, I think it was.
61. I think it was. Yeah,
61 America, and he got out of shape. So you know, Bill he went to Bill Pearl in Sacramento, and Bill Pearl trained him for the Universe.
Okay.
He put him on a crash program where he like lost all his fat like in 2 months, got in really great shape and won the amateur. He won the amateur NABBA Universe when Bill Pearl won the professional in 64.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, so then, you know, like I say, now we go up to 71 and, you know, there's Bill Pearl showing up and, you know, Arthur Jones, Sergio had done some business with Arthur Jones of the Nautilus Company.
Yeah.
Arthur Jones was saying in all the magazines that Sergio would destroy Bill Pearl.
Yeah.
You know, because Arthur Jones actually knew Bill Pearl pretty well, too. He had done a movie with Bill Pearl in 1959, somewhere in the Deep South. It was some sort of vampire movie. Or a zombie movie. It was a zombie movie.
Yeah.
So, Arthur Jones was writing in all the magazines that Sergio was a freak of nature. And he was going to just absolutely destroy Bill Pearl. And of course, you know, the truth is Sergio entered and he was big. But if you look at the photos, Sergio looked kind of smooth. He wasn't really ripped. Now, it wasn't that Bill Pearl was ripped. He was kind of smooth in the legs, too. I mean, his legs didn't have much muscularity, but he did have like perfect symmetry. I mean, his proportion and symmetry were excellent.
Yeah.
He posed really well. And for him, at 41, he was probably in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
You know, now, later on, Frank Zane complained because when they were doing the comparisons, you know, they were supposed to turn to the right, turn to the left. Bill Pearl refused to turn. I think it was he only wanted to stay in one direction on the side thing to show his treasure.
To the left, I think, yeah.
Yeah, he refused to turn. And Frank Zane pointed out that the judges allowed him to get away with it. It's kind of a similar situation to when Arnold competed in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah.
He was doing all these shenanigans on the stage, like Franco coming out and toweling him off.
Yeah.
When he was on. I mean, this is not allowed in bodybuilding competition.
Right.
You can't just walk up on stage and towel another guy off.
Yeah.
And when the judges tell you to turn to the side or turn to the front, you can't stand there and not listen to them. I mean, Oscar State. Do you remember Oscar State?
Yeah, sure.
Oscar State used to be the head judge in the IFBB. If that was Oscar State at that show, he would have said, Bill Pearl, turn to the left, turn to the... If Bill Pearl just stood there, he would have yelled.
Yeah.
He said, Bill, turn to the left now! He would have yelled, you know, embarrassed him.
Right.
You know, but the judges just let him get away with it, according to Frank Zane. I wasn't there. This is Frank Zane talking.
Yeah, yeah.
So Frank Zane was trying to basically say that he felt that the contest was a bit fixed.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl.
Now, well, I know those NABBA judges love Bill Pearl.
Just they absolutely love him. Bill Pearl was like a god to them.
Yeah. When he showed up for a contest, it was like, whoa, Bill
Pearl. Yeah, they loved Bill Pearl. It's true. Yeah. You know, and Bill Pearl tells a story. He wrote an autobiography later on, and he tells a story how they were preparing to pose backstage, And you know, Sergio was pumping up nearby, and a little kid came up to Sergio and asked him for an autograph. And Sergio, which he did to me, I know this story is true, because Sergio did the same thing to me years before.
Get the fuck out of my face.
Get the fuck out of my, get away from me. Get the fuck out of here. Tells this to a little kid about 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl overheard this, right? Then the kid goes up to Bill Pearl, asks him the same question. Bill Pearl not only, you know, gives him an autograph, but, you know, picks him up and, you know, takes a photo with him.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that that kid's father was one of the judges. Was one of the judges. And so Bill Pearl used that to show that you should always act nice to people. Right. You never tell who you're dealing with, which was true.
Right.
So you have to wonder, did that play a role into, you know, Sergio losing to Bill Pearl? Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
it did. I don't know. But I know that myself, I mean, I have to admit, Bill Pearl was my idol when I was a kid, you know, my first bodybuilding idol. And when I look at the photos, I have to give Bill Pearl an edge. Honestly, objectively, as great as I think Sergio was, even though I didn't think much of him personally, I do give him credit. I always do, as one of the greatest freakiest, as I said earlier, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever, one of the most genetically gifted by far. But in that show, I believe Bill Pearl was in better, quote unquote, contest condition.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl had peaked for that contest. He was, in other words, Bill Pearl was the best he could be for his physique, where Sergio was not at his best. Now I will add that if Sergio had, you know, put his ego aside and dropped down maybe what, 10 pounds, no more than that, and entered shredded, I believe he would have beaten Bill Pearl. He would have destroyed him, as Arthur Jones would have predicted. In other words, let me put it this way, to put it make clearer. If Sergio had competed in the 71 universe looking like he did at the Essen Olympia, was it 72?
The next year.
You remember how good he looked that year?
Yeah.
He would have absolutely wiped Bill Pearl off the stage, even with the Brit. The British judges, whoever they would have had to give it to Sergio, because it would look ridiculous. But Sergio entered with a water. He had water retention under his skin.
Mm-hmm.
He looked a little bloated.
Yeah.
Reg Park was in the show. Again, Reg was an older man by that time. He looked great. He looked great, but, you know, he just wasn't quite up to structurally. Structurally, he had a better structure than Bill Pearl. You know, he had wider shoulders and, you know, narrow.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he just, you know, he wasn't up to Bill. He wasn't quite in the shape of Bill Pearl and Sergio.
Yeah.
Wasn't Dave Draper in that show?
He was in the year before, in 1970.
Oh, okay, the year before.
Yeah. Because Reg beat Dave in 1970,
Yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed him. I don't know if you heard the interview I did with Frank Zane last year. And he was talking about that contest. And he said he learned a lot about kind of how to handle the judges by watching Bill Pearl at that show. Because he said, you know, you were talking about the judging when they said the turn.
Yeah,
I think Bill's best side was his left, right?
Yes.
So they said, turn to the right. And he just stayed to the left.
Right.
And the judge said, Mr. Pearl, we need to see your right side. And he looked at the judge and he goes, don't be difficult. And the judge just said, okay, all right.
I mean, that's the thing, that he could not have gotten away with that with a guy like Oscar State.
No, yeah.
Oscar State was all business. He took his job very seriously. He would have demanded, he would have stopped the contest until Bill Pearl turned to the right. That's how strict he was.
But Frank also told me a story about the 1980 Olympia. And remember Dennis Staller?
Yes, yeah.
He was the guy actually on stage in Pumping Iron telling Arnold and Serge Dubre how to hit the poses and stuff, you know.
Right.
So he was on stage, he said, in 1980.
Right.
And when Arnold was pulling all this stuff at the pre-judging and he wouldn't hit a side tricep pose and all that stuff, Dennis Stallard said, if you don't hit the poses, I'm going to suspend you. I'm going to kick you out of the contest. Frank Zane said when they came back for the night show, they fired Dennis Stallard and sent him home.
There you go. That tells you something.
Yeah.
See, that kind of stuff, when you hear stories like that, you kind of like have to think, you know, how Mike mentioned to the end of his life.
Yeah.
Insisted that the 1980 Mr. Olympia was fixed.
Yeah.
Normally you might say, you know, write it off to sour grapes on the part of Mike Mensa because he didn't win.
Right.
But his stories like that, it makes you wonder, you know.
Yeah.
And also another thing is the fact that, as you know, the guy who was the promoter of the show was an old close friend of Arnold's.
Paul Graham.
And, you know, so, you know, I mean, look at a guy, you talk about integrity. Because Chris Dickinson was in that show in the 80 Olympia, Bill Pearl was supposed to be the head judge.
Yeah.
But he voluntarily recused himself because Chris Dickinson, he had trained for the show.
Yeah.
And he felt it wouldn't be objective for him. That's the way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
See, that's the way you're supposed to do it. But, I mean, these guys got away with murder. Bill Pearl himself did at the 71 by not turning to the side. You know, and he probably did look better from the what was it, the right side, whatever it was.
Left side, man.
You got to play the game.
Right side, man. I don't know.
You know, if you're not willing to follow the way it works, then you shouldn't be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I have nothing but admiration. I'm not trying to put down Bill Pearl. It's just not right that he was allowed to get. How I don't think it even would have changed the course of the show. I think Bill Pearl still would have won. But now, you know,
now Frank Zane was in the short class. And he beat out Kasim Yazbek. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I vaguely remember him, yeah.
Tony Emmett was third.
Tony Emmett, great abs, another guy with great abs.
Yeah, probably not at his peak at that time. Yeah. And the other guys, Ludwig Ingebretsen was fourth. Bill Hemsworth was fifth. I heard of Bill Hemsworth.
Yeah, I did too.
And Warren Langman. I wonder if that's the same Warren Langman that was an IFBB promoter later on. In the
probably.
70s. Yeah,
probably he was sixth. Yeah. But I mean, Tony Emmett was, he came to California for a while. I got to know him.
Okay.
Really, really sweet, wonderful guy. Nice guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy. I mean, nicest. If there's any way you could interview him, I believe he's still alive.
Yeah.
He'd be a great interview. He's just a super, super nice guy.
I was talking to him a couple of years ago. He's in his 90s and he was
Isn't
on
that
Facebook.
Old?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was on Facebook, and I was going to interview him. And then I think he just got off of Facebook, and I completely lost touch with him. So I
yeah. You know, he was just one of the nicest guys you could imagine.
Yeah.
And boy, did he have some abs on him. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This was 71. So I think Tony won it in 77. So that was later on.
Yeah. 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 He probably was a little.
But yeah. Zane looked really good that year. I mean, cause Zane won the amateur the year before. And I've seen pictures of Frank from 71, and man, did he look good that year. He was really great shape.
But correct me if I'm wrong, John, but didn't Zane also complain that they didn't compare?
He didn't compare him, yeah. Because normally they take the short class and tall class, and after Bill won the tall class, they just also announced him as the overall winner. They never compared the two of them together.
See, that looks funny, too.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I mean, seriously, why would you not?
Now, do you think that's why Joe Weider wouldn't let Arnold go in it? Do you think he knew that they were going to Bill Pearl no matter what?
In fact, I think Joe told me that himself.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, Joe told me that he advised Arnold. Arnold didn't have much interest in competing in it. Well, Arnold actually did have much interest.
Oh, Arnold wanted to do it, yeah.
Now, Arnold wanted to do it because he felt he would have destroyed Bill Pearl.
Yeah.
He wanted to do it. But Joe Weider advised him not to because he felt that you know, he knew about the judges loving Bill Pearl in England.
Yeah.
And he said, it won't be a fair. He says, Arnold, even if you go in there, I'm telling you, there's a good chance you'll lose to Bill Pearl. It's not worth it. Skip it. And Arnold followed his advice. Arnold did not compete.
And that's weird, too, because Arnold had won the universe 4 years in a row, 67, 68, 69, and 70.
Right.
So he was the reigning champion. And then he would have won more NAVA universes than anybody because he only won four, and then Bill Pearl won four.
Right. That's true. But the thing is that as great as Arnold was, and he was well-liked, too,
mm-hmm.
No, I mean, it wasn't – nobody could compare the way the British liked Bill Pearl.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was put on such a pedestal that I venture to say it would be almost impossible to beat him that night.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, again, the only possibility I could see is if Sergio really had entered looking like he did in Essence, shredded and ripped, he just could not be beaten. I mean,
yeah, they would have to give it to him, yeah.
No bodybuilder on earth could have at that time could have beat Sergio on that
night. Yeah.
I mean,
and I remember Frank Zane kind of criticized Bill Pearl's physique. He said, you know, he had no cuts in his thighs.
That's true.
His back really wasn't that good. No. He really looked good just standing there. Right. Standing there was the best pose for him. He just looked amazing.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Bill Pearl had a great relaxed, you know, the great relaxed poses.
Because he had so much muscle mass and so much great symmetry and proportion.
Yeah, you know, the famous shot of him standing like this, just standing.
Sure, yeah.
He looked terrific because, like you say, he had great symmetry, proportion. All the body parts looked, you know, symmetrical.
And he was a huge guy for that time. Yeah. Huge.
But when he flexed, it wasn't what you expected. I mean, like, for example, with his arms hanging down, that gigantic tricep, his arms were extremely impressive hanging. But when he flexed it like this,
yeah,
it's not that they look bad, but they didn't look that big.
Right, right.
Bill Pearl did not look like he had 20-inch arms when he flexed it.
Right, right.
To me, they look like but maybe 18 3/4 at the most, maybe 19 at the most.
Yeah.
More like 18 1/2, right? And as Frank Zane correctly points out, Bill Pearl had a wide back, but there was no separation there at all.
Yeah.
He had no back separation, nothing. And his deltoids were very mediocre, just passable.
Yeah. You know?
So Frank Zane was right. I mean, he had a lot of flaws in his physique.
That's probably why Frank was so pissed that they didn't put him together.
Well, yeah, it was not judged fairly, I have to say.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Pearl probably still deserved to win, though, because, like I said, he was at his peak, but – it should have been judged a little bit more evenly, you know, with the comparison of the short and tall.
Yeah, for sure.
And also,
yeah.
Bill Pearl should have had to, you know, do all the mandatory poses. It would have been a cleaner win, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
The way it is, it does look kind of bad. You know, when you hear these details, it looks almost like fixed for Bill Pearl.
Yeah.
And that's what Arthur Jones wrote after the show. He said the contest was fixed for Bill Pearl, and Sergio had no chance of winning. That's what he wrote in the magazines.
Hmm. Yeah, I talked to Wayne Galash because Wayne was there and he filmed it. And he thought Sergio was holding water. He thought Bill Pearl should have beat him.
Yeah, he was. He was. He definitely was. You could look at the photos and see.
He was probably from the flight coming over, you know.
Yeah. He was kind of soft looking, you know.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl, I don't know whether because he lay in the sun, I don't know what it was, but he didn't show much water retention. He was just kind of smooth.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have the on the other hand, Bill Pearl's physique would be considered by the average person today much more pleasant looking than the guys who are competing in the pro division today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the guys with all the vascularity and, you know, varicose veins on their lower legs and stuff like that. I mean, very few people would find that good looking. Like the bodybuilders themselves couldn't care less what those people think.
Right.
But Bill Pearl had, as a bodybuilder, would actually appeal to people on the street because he was muscular, but not to the point where it was like kind of scary looking.
Well, including yourself, right, Jerry? I mean, you were a big fan of Bill Pearl.
A very big fan, yeah. He was my idol when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I wrote to him. We corresponded for 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I always tell him when I see him, I always thank him for that. I said, you know, you're the only guy. Because I knew at the time I was training at Mid-City Gym, I happened to know the guy who was the editor-in-chief of what was called Muscle Builder Magazine back then. That was the forerunner of Muscle and Fitness, a guy named John Twitchell.
Yeah.
John Twitchell gave me the addresses of all the top bodybuilders at the time. This is the early 60s. I had Larry Scott, Bill Pearl, Reg Park, about four other guys who I don't even remember. I wrote them all letters asking them how much it would be to write me a routine. I was 14 years old, you know, and the only guy who answered me, no, there was two guys who answered me. Larry Scott sent me a little business card from Vince's gym where he wrote on the back, I will send you a routine for $100. That's all it was. That's all he sent me. Bill Pearl sent me back a full letter and I wrote back and I wrote to him. I remember asking him some of the stupidest questions because I was a kid. I remember reading in the magazine, Steve Reeves had said in an article that he didn't like to use pillows when he slept because he felt it weakened his neck muscle. So I remember asking Bill Pearl, I said, Bill, I read that Steve Reeves doesn't sleep on pillows because it weakens his neck muscles. And Bill Pearl writes about, Jerry, all I can tell you is I've always slept on pillows and I still do. It doesn't weaken my neck muscles. I remember him answering.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
He had a lot of patience for me because I asked him questions, if I say so myself. I was only 14. You know, I didn't know.
But Jerry, isn't it amazing when people show acts of kindness like that, especially someone you look up to, you'll never forget it. I mean,
never.
It could take 30 seconds and you'll never, like that kid he put on his shoulders, you know.
That's right. That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
Like you say, I say, even after all these years, it's been, you know, over 60 years. You know, I'm impressed that, I mean, this, remember, this went on for 3 years.
Yeah.
He didn't have to answer me at all. None of the other guys did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, but I didn't, I mean, Reg Park didn't answer me, but I became friends with him. I didn't hold it against him or anything.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, I mean, like you say, it was an act of kindness.
Yeah.
That I'm still impressed by it. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know how they say, pass it forward, that expression.
Mm-hmm.
Like when somebody does something kind for you, you know, you should do it for other. To this day, I try and emulate Bill Pearl.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will send me, you know, questions, not that I'm a great bodybuilder or anything, you know, questions about nutrition or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I try to answer them most of the time. I'm not getting a thing from it. I mean, they don't subscribe to my newsletter, nothing.
Right.
I get nothing out of it. But I always say to myself when I get these emails, I say, I remember Bill Pearl. I said, Bill Pearl answered my, he didn't charge me anything. He answered me, you know, and so I'm going to pass on the kindness. I'm going to answer these.
Yeah. Questions. Yeah.
And I do. And yeah. Bill Pearl, I do it because Bill Pearl did it for me.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's true.
I know. I'm the same way. Like if I'm not that I'm a big name or anything either, but if people come up to me at these, you know, the Olympia or something, they go, hey, I listen to your podcast or, you know, I saw pictures of you when you won this or whatever. I always absolutely take a picture with them. You know, I mean, sure. I would never blow anybody off, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what does it take? A couple of minutes of kindness.
Yeah.
Why be a prick about it? You know, I've seen guys, I don't want to mention names, a couple, and you've probably heard the stories.
Sure.
A couple of top bodybuilders doing that. I remember taking Bill Grant when he was competing. We watched a bodybuilder, you know, demand somebody pay $25 for an autograph. We both went into it, right? So I said to Bill Grant, he was competing that night in the show against this guy. I don't want to mention the guy because
I know.
But I said to Bill Grant, I said, you should take a lesson from that, Bill. He says, what do you mean? I said, never, ever act like that to your fans.
Yeah.
I said, always be kind and nice to your fans because without them, you're nothing, man.
Yeah.
You're nothing. I said, anything you want, you always act nice and don't expect anything in return.
Yeah.
People will love you for it. They'll know that you're a nice guy.
Yeah.
He followed my advice to this day.
Yeah.
Bill Grant always acts very friendly to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and when I first met him, he wasn't like that.
Right.
I told you what he did to me at Gold.
Right.
He gave me the cold shoulder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he changed. He was smart enough to realize it. And he changed.
Yeah.
And that's what a smart guy, there's no reason to act unkind to people.
But it just amazes me when you look up at somebody and they just, it could take 10 seconds.
Nothing.
You don't ever forget it. You'll remember for the rest of your life. You'll never forget it. It's amazing.
That's right. Well, look another example at that IFBB show that I told you about where Sergio told me to go. Get the fuck out.
You never forget when they're mean to you either.
right. But that show, I think it was with Don Holworth when in 67. I went up to Don Holworth. I went up to every, I can't even remember all, there was a guy named Gabe Boudreaux.
Boudreaux, around,
in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be a good interview too. He's still around. Gabe Rousseau.
Okay.
Yeah. He's still, and he's in good shape. Guy's got to be in his 80s. He's in good shape.
Wow. It's like John
DeCola. Like a short class that year. All the top bodybuilders. I was a kid. I went up and asked him for an autograph. All of them gave me the autograph. But then I went up to Sergio and he gave me that get the fuck out of my face. Who do I remember? Sergio.
Right.
The only guy, I don't even remember getting the autographs from the other guys. In fact, when I met Don Holworth years later, I said, Don, I first met you the night you won the 67 IFBB America. I went up and asked you for an autograph. He said, I guess so. I don't remember. I said, I wouldn't expect you to.
Yeah.
You know, but the point is that Sergio stands out for his meanness.
Yeah.
And then he did it to me 35 years later again. When I told his son, Sergio Jr., the story, the son cracked up. He thought it was a miracle that you know, he didn't change in all those years. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so like I say, I mean, a lot of people say, I mean, I know that you got along well with Sergio. A lot of people say Sergio was a great guy. Mm-hmm. He was a nice guy and he was very nice to people. Unfortunately, as I say, I can only go by the way he treated me, which was atrociously. So I'm not going to say I hate the man, but I can't say I like him because of that.
Yeah.
But you'll never, ever, John, hear me put him down as a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
As a bodybuilder, he's incredible.
Oh, one
of the greatest of all time. I can hate his guts, but I'll always give him credit. That's the way I am.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I always give credit for when credit is due, always.
But Bill Pearl must have read Influencing Friends and People, or what was the name of that book?
Oh, Dale Carnegie. How to Win Friends and Influence.
How to Win Friends. Because he always had it down right. He was always like, I think I told you the story. The first time I met Bill, I was 25 years old. They used to have that club industry show in Chicago. I think it was McCormick Place. And I used to always go just to walk around. Because sometimes Weider would have bodybuilders there and stuff.
Yeah.
So Bill was working for Life Fitness. And it was super crowded. I remember walking through the crowd and I saw the Life Fitness booth and I saw Bill Pearl. And as I'm walking toward it, I'm thinking, man, should I go over there? Should I go and try and meet Bill Pearl? And so I had, I was competing. So I was pretty good shape. I was big and I had a polo shirt on. And as I got close to him, I'm trying to think, okay, what should I say to him? How should I introduce myself? He comes up to me. And he goes, you got the kind of physique that we had back in my day, you know, that big rugged look. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I couldn't believe Bill Pearl said that to me. So and he shook my hand and I'll never forget that the rest of my life.
And you immediately liked him, did you? You figured
out. Oh yeah, for sure. Not only that, but I'll never forget that story, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the way to be a likable person, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Dale Carnegie. One of his rules in that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is to use the person's name several times in the conversation.
And Bill does that too.
Yeah, because you're recognizing them as an individual, and that's the subliminal message you're giving them.
Yeah,
you're not just some other person. You're John.
Yeah.
You know, when you're recognizing them as an individual human being, and even though they don't realize it, the message they're getting is that he recognizes me as an individual person rather than some face in the crowd. And they like you for that.
I
always do that. And I'm not trying to be a phony. It's kind of ingrained in me.
Yeah.
Every time I meet people, I try and use that. I ask them their name and I'll use it to not only to remember the name, because I know it makes them feel good. And I always try to remember people. So that's another thing. And I'm bad at that. I have to admit. I've had guys come up to me in the gym and they say to me something like, hey, Jerry. And I look at him. I said, who is this guy? I have no idea who it is.
Yeah.
I met you when you were training with Bill Grant back in 1978. This is like 2018. The guy's going, I met me one time for 5 minutes and I'm supposed to remember this guy.
Right.
So I always try. You know, I'll start the conversation because I don't know the guy's name. I'm hoping somewhere along the line, the guy will mention his name so I can act like I remember him. But you know what the point is? I never act like, I never give him one of these, you know me, I don't know who you are.
Yeah. Right.
I never do. Never. When a guy comes up and says, hey, Jerry, you know, like, hey, how you doing? I immediately say that. And the guy will say, I met you 40 years ago. I'll say, oh, great. Yeah. And who was I with when you? Oh, it was me and my blah, blah, blah. And sooner or later, the guy will mention his name. Then I'll mention his name. And then the guy thinks I really remember him. And it makes him feel good.
Yeah.
Because this guy says, hey, Jerry remembers me after 40 years. It makes the person feel really good.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you who the king of that, the best guy I've ever seen with doing that is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really?
Arnold will meet you one time. You have one short conversation with him. He will remember you 10 years later.
Wow.
I don't know how I've even said this to him. I said, Arnold, how the hell do you do this? I said, anyone you talk to for more than 5 minutes, you remember their name. He said, I don't know. I just do.
He must have read that book too.
He must have. But yeah. I mean, think about it though. As a politician, do you realize what a potent, what a potent asset that is?
Absolutely.
To remember people, that really helped him.
Yeah. Well, let's also talk about the, NABBA universe in the amateur division that year, which was a really, really tough contest. A lot of competitors. I'm looking at the list here.
Yeah.
So Dickerson, who last year in 1970 won the America, he went over to the NABBA universe. He won the short class there in 1970. Yeah. He beat out Franco. I remember that was kind of controversial because Franco was much more muscular than Dickerson. Yeah, right. But Dickerson wins again the short class.
Yeah.
This time he beats out Elias Petsis from South Africa, who had a really nice physique.
I remember him, yeah.
Frank Colombera from Australia.
Great legs, big calves.
Yeah, yeah, real good symmetry.
Yeah.
Charles Colris. Was fourth, so he went over to NABBA.
Yeah.
And some of these other guys, I don't know, John Holtz from the United Kingdom. So that was a really good short class.
Yeah.
And then in the medium class, Albert Beckles wins for the first time. He takes first place. He was second to Frank the year before, Frank Zane.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he moves up to first. And Roy Callender was second. So
Roy Callender, yeah. Albert Beckles and Roy Callender in the same class?
In the same class, yeah.
Wow, those are two great, wow.
Yeah, two great bodybuilders, right.
Wow.
Let's see. Lars Lund from Norway was third.
I remember Lars Lund. Yeah,
big guy. He was doing a lot of those NABBA shows back then.
Yeah.
Pete Caputo, your training partner, was fourth.
I remember when Pete went over there. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember that. I think I was training with him for that show too. Yeah.
71.
Yeah, yeah, because he won the in 70. You know how he went over there? He won Dan Lurie's Mr. America contest.
Oh, okay.
WBBG, I think it was.
WBBG, called. Yeah.
He beat Bill Grant in that. That was 1971. Grant won it in 72 next year. And as part of his prize, Dan Lurie sent him to London, the NABBA universe.
Did he pay? Did he pay his way over there?
Pay his way to, over, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Erling Wahlgren was fifth.
He was from Sweden.
From Sweden, right.
Big guy, yeah.
Roy Duvall was seventh.
Another guy with great abs, English, British bodybuilder.
Yeah, he won there. I think he won in 73, right?
Yeah. Did you interview Roy Duvall?
Yeah. And Johnny Fuller was not in the top eight.
Johnny Fuller, yeah. Johnny Fuller, he came to California years later.
Oh, really?
I guess not that much later. I met him. Gold's Gym was on 2nd Street, I remember. He used to go there. He was a very nice guy. Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation one time. He told me something that almost knocked me off my feet. Because he had big legs, John.
Yeah.
Thick thighs.
Real thick, yeah.
Ass, right? Right?
Yeah.
And he said to me, he just casually said, he says, you know, I run marathons. I said, what? He says, I like to run marathons. I said, Johnny, I said, a marathon is 26 miles, 385 yards. I said, you really run marathons? He said, yeah, so what? I said, how the hell do you? I said, marathon runners are twigs. I said, these guys weigh like 105 pounds. I said, how the hell do you do that? He says, I just do it. I said, you don't lose any muscle size? He says, nothing.
Hmm.
I never forgot that conversation because I never saw a guy who looked like
he was such a strange guy. I remember he did sets of 32 reps.
Yes. This guy was Mr. Endurance.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. He had really thick muscles.
I know, but when he tells you he runs marathons, if you watch him train with weights, you believe it.
Yeah.
Because he did these crazy high rep things, like 30, 50 reps per set.
And wouldn't he eat like tuna fish and pineapple or something? He had a great diet too, I remember.
Yeah, no, he had a pretty strict diet, but he for some reason he loved to do very high reps in the gym.
Yeah.
And you know, he was like almost like a forerunner. He was like way ahead of his time because it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that they proved scientifically you can get large muscles by doing much lighter weight, maybe 30% to 40% of one rep max. That's almost a warm-up weight, John.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But if you do higher reps, 25 to 30, but go to failure, you get the same muscle growth you get as lifting, let's say, 90% of one rep, which is heavy weight. You get the same amount of muscle growth.
Hmm.
And you know, because for years I couldn't figure out how Johnny Fuller, a guy like him, could get that thick doing those high rep stuff with moderate weight. But now when I saw the research, I realized why. Because he did go just about to failure.
Wow.
Like the guy 30 to 50 reps per set.
Yeah. Yeah, he went on to win the IFBB Universe in 1980. So that was almost 10 years later. Yeah.
I think he, I remember vaguely he died of cancer, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he's been dead for a while.
Yeah, it's sad. He was a really nice guy. He was the talk all the time. Nice guy. Very nice guy.
So the tall class, Ken Waller, what a year he had. He wins the tall class. So it's kind of weird. Ken Waller was suspended from competing in the Mr. America, which he was probably favored to win because he was second the year before. And so then he goes on, he wins the IFBB Mr. America. And then he goes on to the NAVA Universe and wins the NAVA Universe. So
I'll tell you a funny story about that. When he was training for that show, right, the NAVA Universe, I'm talking Ken Waller.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl, of course, was also training for the NAVA Universe. Bill Pearl had this thing he was doing at his gym in Pasadena. He would do this kind of thing where you'd wrap the waist. I don't know if you remember that. They had this thing where they'd put a wrap around your waist. It had some sort of solution that was supposed to cause you to, like, instantly lose inches off your waist.
Hmm.
Of course, it was a fraud.
Yeah.
I didn't know at the time, but what it did was it basically had a dehydrating solution. The wraps were bathed in a type of dehydrating chemical that basically pulled the water out.
So
it temporarily gave you shrunk the waist. All the water was kind of taken out of your midsection. So it gave you an artificially small, you could lose about 2 inches on your waist.
Damn. I wish they had that now.
Well, they still do, believe it or not. It just,
really?
It was exposed as a fraud. So, it, you know, it lost a lot of business.
Yeah.
In those days, they were telling people it was fat that you lost.
Right.
Lose fat that fast. No. It doesn't happen. You're not, because all you do is you put the wrap on and you just sit in a room for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then you take the wrap off. You can't lose fat like that. It's impossible.
No.
Nobody. Not even Sergio. Nobody could do that. So I remember Bill Pearl telling me the story when I visited him at the gym one time. This is right when both of them were, you know, preparing for that NAVA Universe, you know, the one we're talking about. He says, you know, Jerry, Ken Waller was here the other day. I said, really? I know Ken. He says, yeah, he did the waist wrap, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah. I said, you know. He says, and you know what's really funny, Jerry? I said, what's that? He says, normally when somebody has the waist wrap thing put on, when we take off the wraps, they're just drenched in sweat. Water's just pouring out of them.
Yeah.
This Ken Waller was dry as a bone. He says, not even a drop of perspiration. He said, I've never seen that in anybody. That's what Bill Pearl told me. I remember that. I have no explanation. I can't explain. You know, what can I say? For some reason, Ken Waller didn't hold much water in his midsection area.
He didn't Ken also have like Bill Pearl's trunks on or something?
Yeah. Yeah, Bill Pearl used to have these kind of like
they're like metallic trunks or
yeah, they were like
sparkly or yeah.
They were like he had like a silver like reflective trunks. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I actually sent away for that. The famous picture of Bill Pearl on the beach in the relaxed pose, he's wearing those
trunks. Yeah.
I was writing to him at the time. I said, Bill, are you going to ever sell those trunks? I'd like to buy them and wear them in a contest myself. And he started selling them, and I bought a pair. I actually bought the trunks.
Wow, okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't look like Bill Pearl in them. But, but he gave Dave Draper the trunks.
Yeah.
In fact, Dave Draper was wearing them.
Won the Mr. America with them, right?
Won the Mr. America. Those were Bill Pearl trunks.
Yeah, 1965.
And when I entered the beach show, one of the Missile Beach shows, the only really good photo of me ever taken of me as a side tricep pose. You might have seen it.
Yeah.
The trunks I'm wearing, those were Arnold Schwarzenegger's trunks that he gave
me. Oh, really? No kidding.
I was wearing Arnold's trunks for that show. Yeah. Arnold gave me a pair of trunks to wear for the contest. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger's trunks.
One of the listeners to the podcast sent me those blue shorts that Arnold used to work out in, the Golden Hurricane ones.
Yeah.
I forget what number it has on it, you know?
Right, that's right.
So they're like 1970s trunks, so they're real like short shorts, you know, like yeah. what we used to wear, you know, like real shorts, not like the ones now that are down to your knees, you know?
Right, right.
I swear to God, Jerry, when I put those on, I look bigger.
Really?
Yeah. I feel bigger. I feel like Arnold in Pumping Iron, you know?
What was it? Was it actually Arnold's trunks or just?
No, some company makes them. But they're the exact same trunks.
Yeah,
I did a photo shoot at the gym because I was dieting. Yeah. And I did a photo shoot Monday and I wore those. I said, wait, hold on. I want to change the trunks. I want to put on the Golden Hurricane trunks.
Yeah, Arnold used to like to work out in those trunks.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
So anyways, Paul Grant was in second place to Ken and, Paul Grant was in, the universe in Pumping Iron.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Roger Walker was second, and Paul Grant was third. So they go way back to 1971.
Paul Grant was from Wales.
Yeah,
United. He had kind of thick waist, but great, you know, good abs.
Yeah.
You know, nice, very good deltoid muscles, good shoulder muscles.
Yeah.
Good legs. Sadly, he died of kidney failure, though, a couple of years back.
Yeah, he's been dead for a while, too, yeah.
Yeah.
So you had a great lineup there. You had Ken Waller, Albert Beckles, and Chris Dickerson, and Ken Waller wins the overall. So like I said, an unbelievable year for Ken Waller.
Yeah.
Wins the NABBA Mr. Universe and you know, what's interesting is Casey Viator didn't go in it. Usually Mr. America always travels to the NABBA Universe, and for some reason, Casey didn't do it. So you wonder how he would have did. He probably would have been in the medium class, right? So he would have been up against Albert Beckles and Roy Callender.
I can only guess why. I think it's because Arthur Jones wanted Sergio to get all the publicity.
Arthur Jones was probably there, right? I'm sure he went over.
Yeah, Arthur Jones was over there. Hmm. And I think that he felt that Casey might have actually won the amateur division there and would have taken some of, like, Sergio's publicity away.
Oh, yeah.
Arthur Jones was absolutely certain, beyond a doubt, that Sergio Oliva would win that year. So, you know, he also knew how good Casey was. He figured if Casey went over there, he would, when the amateur, take some of the kind of sheen off Sergio's win. So he asked Casey not to compete. That's my guess. I'm only speculating.
Wow. That was a bad move on Arthur Jones' part, if that's what he did. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, John. How do you think Casey would have fared against Beckles and Roy Callender, you know?
I think he probably would have beat him, maybe.
Yeah. I think so too.
He was so much thicker. And then you would have had the Ken Waller, Casey Viator pose down.
Yeah.
That should have happened at the America, you know?
Right. Yeah. Casey probably would have beaten Ken Waller too.
Yeah. Boy. And then that's what's a shame about that is Casey never competed until like 1978.
Right.
So it was like 7 years till we never really saw what Casey would have became, because can you imagine if 19 years old, he would have went full blast?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows how good he could have gotten at 20, 21. Man, he would have been unbelievable, you know?
That's true.
Instead, he went away from the sport, right? He got into construction. Yeah. Didn't he have that accident where he fell out from a building and he cut his finger off or something?
Yeah, then he did that Colorado experiment. Colorado experiment. I forget, what was it, 6 weeks? I can't remember.
Yeah.
160 pounds to 203, was it? I don't remember.
Yes. He gained
muscle and this and that. And Arthur
60
Jones,
pounds of muscle, 64 pounds.
Arthur Jones tried to use it as proof of the superiority of high-intensity Nautilus training, you know. But anyone, even back then, everybody knew that, you know, we knew about muscle memory.
Yeah, muscle memory, steroids.
Muscle memory, combination muscle memory and steroids and
I think in the calculations he used not only how much muscle he gained, but how much fat he lost, and then he counted that as like more muscle gained, you know.
Right, that's right. Yeah, he manipulated. Nobody really, I don't think anyone except maybe Mike Mentzer ever accepted that as proof of it never really kept caught on as Jones had hoped that it would show. And, you know, and also of course to use Casey of all the people to use, a genetic freak like Casey.
Yeah.
It would have been more impressive, John, if he took some skinny geek off the street.
Right.
Not sure we don't get it at all.
Yeah.
And put him through it. And then at the end of 6 weeks, I'm not saying the guy would look like a Mr. Olympia, but the mere fact that the guy looks like he can compete in 6 weeks, that would have really proven something.
Yeah.
that would have been an eye opener. Would say, wait a minute. Maybe there is something to this.
Yeah.
Jones was smart enough not to do that.
Yeah.
He would take a chance.
I read something online. Somebody said they made a good point. They said Arthur Jones only worked with genetically superior bodybuilders, you know,
well,
like Casey, Sergio. Yeah.
Well, if you look at it, yeah. I mean, he brought over Boyer Coe and Sergio, Casey. I mean, even Pete Caputo was over there for a while. He went down.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all these guys were already great bodybuilders.
Yeah.
I mean, I use the system myself, and I actually made very good progress on it for a while, but.
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah, but the thing is that, I mean, Arthur Jones never really proved his case that his system could take a guy with average or poor genetics and give him a fantastic physique.
Right.
But Arthur Jones was nothing compared to guys later on. There was a doctor, I just wrote about him in my newsletter. A guy named Doug McGuff, who wrote a book with my former colleague at Weider, John Little.
They wrote a book
where McGuff was also very impressed by Casey Vieira, Arthur Jones, and he kind of devised a similar high-intensity training system. But he went even further. He said that all you had to train was 12 minutes once a week.
Wow.
That's all the training you needed to develop a great physique. And of course, he never proved it. I mean, you know, and I personally don't think that's possible with anybody.
Yeah.
What I wrote in my newsletter is that the only people that might get some progress are training 12 minutes, no matter how high the intensity is, you know, whatever. I said the only people that could probably show good progress was people that completely lacked the genes for a protein called myostatin.
Yeah.
This is a protein that prevents muscle growth. The people that are born without myostatin, if they go like this, brush their hair back, they gain an inch on their arm.
Yeah.
That's how they gain muscle brushing their teeth. That's how easy they gain muscle. But for everybody else, the least you can do, the most you can do, I should say, is possibly keep in shape. It's time, but yeah, and that's not even enough to keep in shape. 12 minutes.
A week. Yeah.
Come on. You know, that's going too far. That's ridiculous.
How commonplace is it for someone to have myostatin deficiency? That's got to be almost impossible, right? I mean,
very rare, right?
Very rare. Yeah.
What is more common is having one, in other words, there's two genes for it, let's say, right? Some people are born lacking one gene for myostatin. Now, what this does is it gives them the proclivity to gain muscle faster.
Okay.
In other words, they still have to work out. They still have to do everything with the diet, all that. But these are what they call the fast gainers that you hear about.
Okay.
These are the people that will go to the gym and start to make gains right away.
Yeah.
Right away.
We've all seen that.
You've probably met guys I have over the years where, you know, they go in and they seem to constantly make gains doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Nothing special, they gain like crazy. Those guys usually are lacking one of the genes for myostatin.
Okay.
If you lack two genes for myostatin, then you would be muscular doing nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're just walking around. You look like a bodybuilder with, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
Not even lifting a 5-pound dumbbell.
Yeah.
You're not going to look like Mr. Olympia. I mean, I've read that Flex Wheeler has written that he seems to think that he was, what they call myostatin null, meaning he was born without genes of myostatin. But I personally think if anything, he probably lacks one gene. Because again, you know,
remember how skinny he was when he started? He was
that's what I go by.
Yeah.
See, that's what I go by. He wouldn't have been like that. If he lacked both genes, he would have been muscular all his life. Maybe not as big as he was as a body. He still would have been undeniably muscular.
But he wouldn't have been that skinny.
He was bone thin.
Yeah, he was bone thin, right?
Yeah, Flex was bone thin.
I think with Flex, maybe it was just that he responds to drugs more than
very responsive to drugs.
It blows up on him.
Yeah. But he could actually be what they call single gene null, meaning lacking one gene for myostatin.
Okay.
That would account for his response.
Okay.
You know, when you took the drugs and trained, you would respond like he does with the big, full muscles. You get that. I think another guy like that was the guy from Egypt, who died. Big bodybuilder.
Nasser.
Yeah, I think Nasser was also negative for one gene for myostatin.
Yeah.
There's another guy that was very responsive, and he had that He had that. That's the kind of look. I know people will say, no, he got that look from the drug. Yes, he took the drugs, but it's a certain type of look you get that, you know, that's almost beyond the drugs.
Okay.
And, you know, and strangely enough, Dorian Yates, I don't think it was just normal. He had the normal genes. He was not a null for Miles then. He was just a guy who just had great genetics.
Yeah.
And trained very hard.
Right. All right. Let's talk about the other big event of 1971, which was the Mr. Olympia. So this was big news now because it was a week after the NABBA Universe. And it was, for the first time, they moved it from America and they brought it to Paris, France, of all places. And the reason why they brought it to Paris, France, was because Serge Nubre, who went on to become the great bodybuilder, was working with the IFBB, and he was involved with, I think he eventually became the vice president. Mm-hmm. And he was promoting, he got a chance to promote the Mr. Universe and the Mr. Olympia together, and he did it in Paris, France. And then this was now, 65, 66, 67, 8, 9, the seventh Mr. Olympia. You know, it was right. The first time they moved it out of the United States.
Yeah.
So we were expecting the big showdown between Arnold and Sergio, but because Sergio went over and competed in the NABBA Universe, this was the year where Joe Weider said, or Ben Weider, I should say, the IFBB said, if you compete outside the IFBB, you will be suspended.
Right.
As a professional. If you're a professional bodybuilder and you compete outside the IFBB, you will be suspended. So, you know, Sergio, that's the reason why they said Arnold couldn't compete against
Right. Pro. But you realize that that's a monopoly. That's actually illegal with Ben Weider.
Yeah.
That's a monopoly. It's illegal to do that. But I don't think Ben Weider realized that.
Yeah.
You know.
So that was the excuse that Arnold. They said that Arnold couldn't compete against Bill Pearl. But you were saying it might have been that Joe Weider was worried that Arnold would lose to Bill Pearl because of the way Bill Pearl
treated. He didn't want to take a chance. Yeah.
So Sergio supposedly, I guess, didn't know about this.
Yeah.
And he comes over from London. He goes over to Paris, France to compete in Mr. Olympia. And then they tell him when he gets there that he can't compete.
Right.
But they said he could guest pose if he signs a letter saying that he's sorry that he, you know, that he went over. So they allowed him to guest pose. So now Wayne Galash was there, and I talked to Wayne, and Wayne said it was such a shame they didn't allow him to compete because he looked way better at the Mr. Olympia than he did a week earlier at the NABBA Universe. He said, Wayne said that he was probably holding water from the flight over to Europe and at the London Universe. And then by the time he got to the Olympia, he said Sergio looked dramatically better. So we didn't get a chance to see Sergio versus Arnold, but the audience gets to see him guest pose, and they only competed three times, 69, 70, and 72. Here was another year where they could have competed against each other. And, you know, what a waste.
It would have been interesting if Sergio had been allowed to compete and beat
him. Yeah. I have to say that Arnold, you know, I'm sure you've seen the pictures, looked amazing that year.
Yeah.
I mean, what a difference from a year ago, from 1970. He looked bigger than ever, but ripped. His legs were shredded. His legs looked amazing.
Right. That's
true. I asked Wayne if Arnold would have competed in NABBA Universe, do you think he would have beat Bill Pearl? And Wayne really didn't want to say. But he said he thinks he would have beat Bill Pearl.
Yeah.
I do, too.
I kind of would have to go with that, too. Yeah.
His back was better. His legs were better.
Unless, again, you know, the judges were so enamored of Bill.
Yeah.
They gave it to him anyway over Arnold. That's always a possibility. You know, I mean.
But it really seemed like Arnold was really in shape that year in 1971, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe because he thought he was going up against Bill Pearl. Maybe that's why he got in such great shape.
Could be. Yeah, could be. Yeah. Although, you know, he was also very concerned about Sergio Arnold.
Yeah.
I mean, Arnold was extremely impressed by Sergio, you know.
Yeah, and he beat him the year before, but maybe he wanted to make sure that he was going to beat him again, you know.
I mean, yeah, he was always in awe of Sergio all the way through. I mean, that never escaped him. Even when he beat Sergio, he was always in awe of the guy.
Now, Franco was also at the Mr. Olympia, and he was also not allowed to compete. I read in Randy Roach's book, they suspended Franco for competing in, of all things, the AAU Mr. World in 1970, a year earlier.
That's right.
But Arnold was competing in that contest, too. So I don't know why. I have no idea why they suspended Franco.
Now that's weird.
Yeah.
How could Arnold, competing in the same venue, allowed to compete if Franco is not allowed to compete?
And they didn't even have the rule a year ago. They just started the rule in 1971. So
that needs to be explained. There's something really wrong with that, really.
And then Franco won the Mr. World that year in the IFBB. So
right. No, that see, it's all ad hoc.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff they just make out of the top of the heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Ben Weider, in all due respect, he ruled it like some sort of dictator.
Dictatorship. Yeah. Like
anything he wanted just went right on the spot. You know, this guy can't compete. That guy can't compete.
He's making up the rules as they go along.
With no rhyme or reason, just because he wanted it that way.
Right. You know?
I mean, so that's just the way it was. I mean, surprising that some people have spoken about it, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just the way it was.
Yeah. Right? So Franco was also allowed to guest pose. And so,
well, you know what? It's still going on to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Sean Roden.
Yeah. I
mean, they didn't allow him to compete because he got accused of a crime. Accused.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, he was the reigning Mr. Olympia. He was not judged guilty by a court of law.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way it works is you know, innocent until proven guilty. That's the whole basis of the legal system in the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, for them to say you, the incumbent, this is not the guy, like the guy was in 10th place. This was the guy who had won the title. He wanted
the year before. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And for them to say that you can't compete was, again, dead wrong.
Yeah.
Dead wrong. Sean Ray has gone on record as saying, well, it would have been embarrassing. That's a bunch of crap. I mean, you know, I mean, first of all, he cites football players who got in legal trouble, weren't allowed to play.
Yeah.
But the football players still got their salaries. They still made money. Sean Roden lost everything.
Yeah.
All his contracts, everything. It was just completely unfair.
Yeah.
So my point is this kind of crap, even after all these years, it still goes on.
Yeah.
It still goes on.
Well, you think back then, too, 50 years ago, they didn't have social media. So nobody even knew this stuff was going on until they read it in the magazines.
That's right.
And people couldn't go on, you know, Facebook or Twitter and complain about it, you know. And there was, you know, the judge or the IFBB never felt any heat because.
That's true.
It wasn't. It was. And the muscle builder, of course, wouldn't really talk about it.
You know? Yeah, it would do it. Now, think about it. If there was social media back then, the examples you just showed, somebody would have probably picked up on it and said, hey, wait a minute. How is it that Arnold's allowed to compete?
Right.
Frankly, when they both, compete in the same venue.
And everybody would criticize the IFBB. Yeah.
See, they got away with it because of the fact that they're used, like you said, the magazines were controlled.
Yeah.
And it was underplayed. Nobody.
But you didn't get the news until 6 months later.
Right. Nobody knew about it. Yeah. By that time, they say, ah, screw it.
Yeah.
Right. They kind of let it go, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like with the police. I mean, before they had the videos, a cop could do anything he wants to you.
I mean,
if you ran across a cop and let's say he pulled you over, and he was stupid enough to give an attitude with the guy, the guy could pistol whip you, plant drugs in your car, or do anything, or even shoot you dead.
Yeah.
And nobody would know. So, away with it.
So Rodney King and somebody filmed it.
Yeah, but with the advent of video, things changed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a woman on trial right now for shooting a guy with a gun who she thought it was a taser.
I saw that, yeah.
You know, she would have gotten away with it probably if there was no video.
Right.
So, you know, things change, you know.
Well, the other contest that was held that night was the Mr. Universe. The IFBB Universe. So they did hold that with the Olympia, and Albert Beckles was the winner. So that was Albert's first big win.
Yeah.
Now, what was interesting, and I asked Wayne Galash about this, was Albert competed in the NABBA Universe the week earlier. He won the medium class.
Right.
But he was allowed to compete.
Another one.
But Wayne said it was because Albert was an amateur, so they didn't use the ruling because he was an amateur and he wasn't a pro.
Now, explain to me why an amateur would be different than a pro. I don't get it.
It's still the IFBB, right?
Yeah, and the pro is not really the it'd be different if the pros were being given a salary, by the IBB or Joe, well, something like that.
Yeah, they were not. Yeah, the only guy who made money was Arnold, who won the contest.
Exactly.
Second place, they didn't get anything.
Yeah, the pros were independent contractors. In other words, they, you know, I don't even think they had a lot of endorsement contracts back then.
No, nothing back then. No.
So these guys were on their own. So where do you come off saying a pro, you know,
can't compete,
but an amateur? Right. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely senseless.
But, you know, Peter McGuff told me that he thought that the year after this, 1972, he said he thought that was the year that the Mr. Olympia started to rise in prestige. Because before that, the NABBA universe always seemed like it was bigger than the Mr. Olympia. Because there was only like three guys. Remember, like in the, when Larry Scott was winning it, when Sergio was winning it, you'd get three, maybe four guys at the most.
Right.
But then in 1972, I think they had five guys. They had Franco, they had Zane, they had Nubray, Sergio, and Arnold. And they said after, he said after that, that's when it started to gain the prestige. So Peter almost was saying that because they did that ruling, that's what separated the IFBB from NABBA. So.
Maybe. Yeah, I would agree.
Still, if you look at when Arnold was winning in 73, 74, there was only three or four guys in it that year.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. But no, it did, over the years, it did start to become much more prestigious. I mean, because...
Well, after pumping iron, 75. Yeah,
because, I mean, in the 60s, you know, I remember as a kid, everybody who was in bodybuilding knew who the, you know, the current Mr. America and Miss Universe was.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I say Mr. Universe, I mean NABBA Mr.
NABBA Universe, yeah.
I knew every year because the magazines would publicize. I knew who won the amateur and the pro every year.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask me now, who, I don't even know if the amateur.
I know if they even hold it, yeah.
And now if you say to me, who won the NABBA Universe is the most recent one, I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
Because it gets zero publicity in the United
States.
Nothing. And to me, again, I hope, so, forgive me to somebody who takes offense at this, but to me, it makes, what kind of prestige is that where nobody knows Miss Universe?
I know.
I mean, where's the prestigious contest there? Nobody knows.
Well, I was just looking at the lineup of both events, the IFBB Universe and NABBA. NABBA had twice as many people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, how well would these guys do in the IFBB? That's another question.
Right.
Which has more quality, you know? I mean, I've seen some shots of some of the NABBA Universe winners last couple of years. I occasionally come across. Some of these guys are pretty good.
Yeah.
They would actually fare, you know, I don't know if they'd win, but they do well in the IFBB.
Yeah.
But some of the other guys wouldn't even place in the top 10 of Mr. California.
I know.
So, you know.
Well, Albert wins that contest. Carl Blumer from Germany was the tall class winner.
That was Arnold's buddy.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And Helmut Reidmeier from Germany was in second. So two guys from Germany were first and second. And Mike Katz was third. So
yeah.
That was kind of weird. And then I think Mike won his class the next year, so he only got third that year.
Right.
Vic Downs was in that show too. He got fifth.
Yeah.
And then in the medium class, Albert Beckles won. He beat Ahmet Anulu from Turkey, who was a great bodybuilder. And Ed Corney got third.
Yeah.
So Ed won the next year in 72. That was the one that was covered in Pumping Iron, where he's on the cover from Baghdad, you know.
Ahmet Anulu, I used to call him the perennial bodybuilder.
Yeah.
He competed year after year after year.
Yeah.
And started winning. A Turkish guy, I think. A nice build, though.
Turkey from right.
Didn't he compete against Tony Pearson, I think, also?
Yeah, they had a real big pose down in 78.
Yeah.
And the short class, Giuseppe Diana from the Netherlands, he beat out Renato Bertagno. So not a lot of big names in the IFBB universe. But Albert Beckles, that was a big win for him, obviously, because he won the overall.
Yeah, I think when Albert won that, he was about 97 years old.
Yeah.
Today he's, I think he's pushing 150 today.
Yeah, right.
I'm just kidding.
Well, I think in actuality, I think he was a 32 that year.
Yeah.
So.
Albert Beckel's the only guy I know who adds to his age.
Right.
Most guys try to make themselves younger.
I think like you get, if you get past a certain age, you like forget it. Yeah, I'm going to raise it.
Yeah, I'm almost embarrassed to admit my age, but Albert revels in it. He'll add 10 years to his age. You know?
Right.
You never understand that.
All right, Jerry. Well, thank you again for joining me for this long discussion about 1971. That was 50 years ago. 1971 seems like a long time ago. So the big winners that year were obviously Arnold winning his second Olympia,
right.
Bill Pearl winning his fourth NABBA Universe. That was his last contest. Mm-hmm. And Casey Viator winning the Mr. America. And Albert Beckles won the IFBB Universe. Ken Waller had a great year that year. He won the IFBB Mr. America after he wasn't allowed to do the AAU, and then he won the NABBA Mr. Universe. So great year for Ken Waller.
Right.
And it looked like Ed Corney had a really good year too, because he won the Mr. USA, and he did pretty good at the Mr. America that year, and did pretty good at the Mr. Universe. So that was a sort of a breakthrough year for him. And then next year, of course, that was his year when he won the Mr. Universe. That was his breakthrough year. So a lot of exciting contests with a lot of big names that year. And it's fun looking back at these contests from 50 years ago.
Right. Yeah, it was some good times back then. Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually before my time, but it's great looking back at those shows for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Jerry. Well, next time we meet, I guess we'll talk about 1981, which was 40 years ago. And that was, of course, the year that Franco won his controversial Mr. Olympia.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Belknap won the Mr. America.
Yeah.
I think Lance Dreher won the Mr. Universe. And we'll have to look back at who won the NABBA. I can't really recall offhand who won the NABBA Universe.
John, in your opinion, which was more controversial, the 81 Olympia that Franco won or the 80 Olympia that Arnold won? Because those two are definitely the most controversial Mr. Olympia.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think the 80 is still talked about more, but I was there in 81, and, man, I've never seen the worst contest. I was there, yeah.
Oh, man.
I was in the fifth row.
Okay.
I was right up. I can't remember. Maybe not the fifth row, but it was right up because I remember I bought my seats early. And I was there for the prejudging and night show, and I was the top five was just totally wrong. I mean, the crowd, they were literally. I think I said this on a podcast before, throwing things at the judges, like the old days where they would throw cabbages at the judges.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were throwing their programs at the judges. People were reaching in, grabbing change from their pockets, throwing at the judges. Oh, it was horrible.
Who was the crowd? Was the crowd favored Platts or Padilla? What do you think?
Platts.
Platts, okay.
Yeah, I think if you look back at the pictures now, I think everybody says Padilla should have won.
Yeah.
But I thought, I mean, we'll talk about this next week when we talk, but I thought Danny actually looked kind of a little small.
Okay.
In pictures, he looks perfect, but when you looked at him next to Roy Callender was kind of forgotten about in the discussion, but he was amazing that year, man.
Wow, yeah.
Him and Platts, I thought. But it just, Franco looked really good. It just, he didn't have the legs, you know.
No.
So he's automatically fifth because he's missing legs.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, he definitely was not the, should not have been the winner. I mean, the other guys, it's kind of a toss-up.
Yeah.
But Franco definitely, I don't think anyone really objectively would argue that Franco was the deserving winner that year.
Right.
No, nobody could argue that. He just, like I said, his legs, there's nothing there.
Yeah. I thought it was... You know, when you look at what he came back from with that injury, it's amazing. And it's kind of sad that that was kind of forgotten about, you know?
Right.
Because it really was an amazing comeback. I mean, he really
was tremendous.
And I thought his upper body looked like me and my brother were talking about because we were there. Yeah. My brother said that Franco looked better than Arnold did in his comeback.
Hmm. You know, I think I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Upper body for sure.
Yeah.
Because Franco's upper body, as you said, looked pretty good.
Yeah, if not better than ever. Yeah.
Yeah, he still had that great back and the delts and the great abs.
He was ripped. He was so shredded.
That crazy chest he had, you know?
Yeah, and he was probably the hardest guy in the whole show.
Right. It's just his legs.
Yeah.
But you can't win Mr. Olympia unless you can't do it.
Especially with guys like Platts and Dickerson and Villa. I mean, those guys had met unbelievable legs.
I mean, he's going up against the guy who probably had the best legs in bodybuilding history.
Yeah. Now,
what an extreme difference.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's got to be tough, man.
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. Once they announced Padilla at fifth, the booing started and it didn't stop. It was It was constant until first place.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah, the good old days.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, Jer, have a very Merry Christmas this year. This later this week. I know we're recording this before Christmas, and have a Happy New Year next week. And we will talk to you soon. And I can't thank you enough every year for doing this. I know I keep you here for your hours.
It's okay.
But it's fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's, I love going, you know, back there in the past and discussing all these great brings back. Like I say, it's like going down memory lane.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable to me. I mean, I'm into the bodybuilding history like you.
Yeah.
So this is great. You know, and as I said again, at the risk of sounding redundant, credit to you, John, for doing this stuff, bringing back all these great champions. I mean, you're like solely keeping the history of bodybuilding alive through these efforts.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, it's great. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, they should give you a freaking award for crying out loud. So, you know how they give awards at the Olympia?
Yeah.
You should get an award. I'm serious. I mean, you're keeping, who else is keeping bodybuilding alive? You're keeping you have a record of some of the greatest bodybuilders in the last 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should get an award. They should give you an award. I'm saying here in public, John Hansen should get an award for this. I mean. Okay.
I'll send this tape to Dan Solomon.
Tell Dan Solomon I said that. Yeah. Seriously. I mean, he might think about it, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
I'll accept it.
When you get the award, you got to do an arm shot. No, I'm just kidding.
I will. Yeah. All right. Well, okay, thank you again, and have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
You too.
And we'll talk to you in 2022 about the next one.
Sounds good, John. Take care. You too.
Right, you too, Jared. Thanks, buddy. Bye. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Branum for joining us for that long interview, part one and part two. And again, if you haven't subscribed to Jerry's newsletter called Applied Metabolics, please check it out at appliedmetabolics.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank all our generous Patreon donors for, again, sponsoring this episode through their Patreon donations. And if you guys want to be a Patreon donor, just go to the official website of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to subscribe to be a Patreon donor. I appreciate you guys just as much this year as I did last year. All right. So let me read some articles here. The first article is going to be about the 1971 NAVA Mr. Universe contest, and this comes from the Muscular Development magazine, January 1972 issue, and it was written by Oscar Heidenstam. Oscar Heidenstam was the promoter of that NAVA Mr. Universe contest. It says, this was our 23rd Universe contest, and it will go down as one of the best, even if only for the historical clash in the professional contest between Bill Pearl, Sergio Oliva, and Reg Park. Both Park and Pearl put their NAVA Universe titles on the line, both of whom are past 40. The only other name missing in this contest was Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has also won the title four times. Arnold has been saying right along that he will be there and even hurdling challenges to Pearl and Park. However, at the 11th hour, he did not show, being barred by the Weed organization with whom he has some sort of a contract. Arnold sent me the two letters he received from Weeder directing him not to compete. And I feel, with all due respect to Arnold, the fact should be known. In any case, Arnold was not in this great contest. We had a total of 38 in the amateur contest and 11 in the professionals. The amateur contest was competed in three height divisions, the professionals in two. We also had two separate judging panels, one for the amateurs and another for the pros, all of international reputation and high integrity. Each and every one has had a long experience in dealing with physiques, and most have been physique competitors themselves. Many of the judges came from France, Belgium, Germany, Switzerland, Norway, Jamaica, Singapore, Syria, and of course, Great Britain. So the judges were well represented. As usual, the judging took place the day before and was attended by over 700 people who were unable to get to see the show the next day because the house was a sellout since July. 12 entries from 10 different countries were on hand. Let me
clarify, they're talking now about the short class from the amateur division. It doesn't have that listed here, but that's what they're talking about now. So it says 12 entries from 10 different countries were on hand in the short class. The class had real international flavor, and it was of high standard. The welcome return of Chris Dickerson, the former Mr. America, who was over last year, and he won his height class, was back again for a second try. The sensation of the class, however, was Elias Petsis of Greek origin and now living in South Africa. He has entered twice before, but his improvement this year was incredible. Frank Colombera, who placed fourth last year, stayed in Britain throughout the year to compete again. Frank has a really fantastic physique that keeps improving each time we see him. Another American was Chuck Colras, who came in at the last minute entry, and he added strength to this class, along with two British lads, John Holt and Michael Baker, both outstanding physiques. It was a pretty decisive victory for Dickerson, thus overcoming the first step for the title. Second was Elias Petsis, and third was Frank Colombera, and fourth went to Chuck Colras. Fifth was Jack Holt, and sixth was Michael Baker. Class two, the medium height class. This was the largest class with 17 competitors. We had all been expecting Casey Viator to compete in this class, and after sending him entry blanks to four different places, we did not hear from him, nor did he show up. Too bad. In this class, a big clash between Al Beckles, the Mr. Britain title holder, and Roy Callender was expected. At their meeting 2 years ago, Roy won over Al, but it turned out differently this time. Also competing was a huge Norwegian, Lars Lund, who took third last year, although other Scandinavians in the contest were equally impressive and dominated the votes. Now they're talking about the tall class. This is really goofy. Okay, I don't know which class you're talking about. It says the huge Norwegian, Lars Lund, who took third last year, although other Scandinavians in the contest were equally impressive and dominated the votes. But now they're talking about the tall class. It was a clear victory for Ken Waller in the tall class, with Paul Grant taking second. Third place was a battle between Dennis Wilkins of England and Clement Wisdom of Jamaica, who could carry more overall size. An East Indian who has been living in England and a man with a big future in the physique world, and the current Mr. South Africa title holder, Chris Kaiser. They placed in the order given, but many variations of judging resulted from such a large panel of judges. Nevertheless, the winners had to be decided, so the judges called the men back several times. Finally, the title was decided from the three first-place class winners, giving Ken Waller first, Chris Dickerson second, and third went to Al Beckles. So Ken Waller added his name to the long list of NABBA winners. All right, the professional contest. I wonder if there will ever again be such an electric atmosphere that predominated the judging and at the show the next day as it was this time. This surely must have been the greatest contest of all time, with two of the main contenders, both in their 40s, and both having already won three Mr. Universe titles. The first and last person up to this year to do this was John Grimmick. And for the first time, a man in his 40s won the title. Actually, Bill and Reg were both unbelievable for their age. Then if you add Zane and Oliva to this list, you can imagine the amount of muscle that dominated the hall. Only the absence of Schwarzenegger prevented the contest, the likes of which will never again be possible. No fault of Arnold's, but his attachment to the Weider organization prevented him from entering. In the medium class, we had only six entries in this class and a lack of real opposition, so Frank Zane took first without any trouble. A close fight for second place between the Syrian, Kasman Yazbek, and Tony Emmett from England, who has entered the professional ranks as a health studio owner. But it was Yazbek who took second and Tony taking third. Fourth place went to Ludwig Ingebretsen, a Norwegian, and fifth to Britain's Bill Hemsworth, with sixth going to Darren Langman of South Africa. And then in the tall class, never in my life did I hear such applause as resounded when Pearl Park and Oliva came out and posed in that order. Each man was called out again and again for comparison, and each was allowed to pose as much as he liked. Someone had to lose and someone had to win. It was a hard decision for the judges to make. Judging must always be a matter of opinion, and whatever the results, no one can ever please everyone. But a winner had to be chosen, and after some deliberation, the winner and runners-up were selected. Pearl looked amazing, and his posing was without par. His symmetry for such a big man was excellent. Park, trained down, had an incredible midsection, somewhat lighter in body weight than usual, but could he really be 43 years of age? Oliva, the impact was unbelievable. Incredible size with muscularity not seen in his pictures. All three winners in their own right. but it was Pearl with 10 first place votes, Oliva with 4 first. So Bill took his 4th Mr. Universe title, and we doubt if there will ever be another Mr. Universe contest like that again. We doubt it. And then the Open Miss Bikini Contest, with our annual Universe Contest, we hold a Miss Bikini Contest, which is growing in popularity each year. And as far as we know, this is the only contest of this type that is held in Britain. There were over 20 entries in this contest, and this included some of our top figures. The current Miss Britain, Linda Ann Thomas, had won a number of national contests this year, including second place in the Miss United Kingdom, a contest that is held in Britain to select Britain's entry for the fabulous Miss World event. Linda, of course, is weight trained and has been entering our contest ever since she was 15. However, all girls are weight trained or attend some sort of keep fit classes. The Miss Bikini winner this year was the attractive Linda Thomas, and this was her third try for the title. And second place was Pat Wheeldon, a former Miss Britain titleist, and third place went to Brenda Sell, winner of the Miss Britain title twice. She's the wife of Len Sell, who is a double Mr. Universe winner. Brenda is the mother of 2 children, so this victory speaks well for her. And fourth place went to Monica Griffins, a wife of a man who enters our NABBA competition regularly, which means we have a number of husbands and wives who train together and enter our contest. We're proud of this achievement, and it speaks well for us. But next year, we'll have another contest with more attractive girls who will train more enthusiastically with hopes of winning the title. We wish them all luck. And that was it. Kind of a short article, but gives you a hint of what happened with that NABBA Mr. Universe title, which was, as you said, and I agree with them, was definitely an historic event. And it really was a shame Casey Viator wasn't in it. And it was really a shame that Arnold was not in it, because that would have really made it probably one of the best competitions, if not the best contest ever. And man, would that have been exciting. That's really a shame that Arnold had to skip that contest because of the Weider rules. All right, now, before we let you go, I want to read this other article called the 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe Contest. And this was written by Bob Heiss, who was an IFBB observer, an AAU delegate, and an FHI alternate. It says, a thrill-by-thrill report of the sensational 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia Contest. Standing under the Arc de Triomphe, the most venerated shrine in the whole of France, I thrilled to a lovely Parisian sunset. I closed my eyes and contemplated all that had happened here at the local point of the capital city of Western civilization for 2,500 years. I saw the fierce armies of Caesar, Napoleon, the Kaiser, Tsar Peter, and Eisenhower enter the Champs-Élysées and wage furious struggles against powerful foes, some to leave victorious, others conquered. Paris appeared such a likely choice to host the greats of might and valor whenever they chose to do battle. Tomorrow, another awesome struggle between giants would start, the 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe Contest. Surprise disqualifications startled 3 entrants. At 2 in the afternoon on September 24th, it began with prejudging, a somber time not at all like the festivities of the formal contest a day later. Prejudging was particularly disheartening for Sergio Oliva and Roy Callender. They were disqualified for entering unsanctioned meets and not allowed to compete. Franco Colombo was disqualified for entering a professional contest. This was the first time ever the IFBB barred contestants from any of its events. The step was necessary to prove the IFBB would enforce its constitution and give it parity with other official international athletic organizations. If bodybuilding is to become an Olympic Games event, it must have an amateur division, and it must have rules and regulations specifying who is eligible or not to compete in amateur and professional categories, insisted the IFBB president Ben Weider in the keynote speech opening the contest. Ben told how the IFBB is gunning for representation in the 1976 Olympics and that favorable progress is being made. Amidst a big cheer from this heartening news, the curtain flew open to reveal all 54 Mr. Universe contestants from 37 countries. The cheers turned into astonished raves. The 21-piece orchestra pranced through the Marseillaise, filling each inch of the majestic and centuries-old Palais de la Mutualite with sound, and the greatest of all IFBB extravaganzas began. First to hit the lights was Talib Shahad from Iraq, the first time his country has ever competed in a broad-based global competition. He received an incredible ovation as the audience finally realized the import of this historic moment the world-famous Mr. Universe contest had found a new home in a city in which it so richly deserved it. One by one, the remaining 53 entrants representing 37 nations came out to display their incredible physiques, and there was no doubt that the level of competition this year exceeded any previous contest by far. Place winners of competitions in Brooklyn would have gotten dressed at prejudging once they saw this crowd. 18-inch arms were mandatory, and after a while, even 19 and 20-inchers looked commonplace. Each contestant was lustily cheered, not only by his followers, but by all of the 3,000 fans lucky enough to obtain the 100-franc tickets to gain admittance. Scalpers were selling stubs at double that during intermission. By posing's end, the crowd was hoarse from roaring, but their shouts never abated. Audience reaction to individual entrants roughly agreed with the prejudging done previously at the Modern Palace Ballroom. They went wild over Giuseppe Diana, an Italian-born Dutchman, 5'4", 180 pounds of granite-like seething muscle in a short man's class. Renato Bertagna of Italy also impressed. The shortest man in the meet, he looked like Sergio Oliva flattened by a sledgehammer. Hubert Plumens of Belgium and Tony Lamouche from France scored heavily via their incredible posing routines, which had American and Canadian entrants delirious with amazement. In the middle height class, several great stars Americans have never seen appeared. Albert Beckles of England got the biggest hand of the night and appeared headed for victory. The outstanding Serge Jacobs from Belgium followed, which raised spectator reaction to fever pitch. And then Ed Corney of America, a dark horse you'll be hearing a lot more of, leaped onto the podium to give the show of his life. The last poser, another newcomer, Ahmet Anulu of Turkey, closed out class two with a rousing routine that had the fans standing in the aisles and applauding insanely. Then it was time for the big boys, the monster men, which the crowd had heard about for years and was dying to see. When Mike Katz, 1970 IFBB Mr. America, trundled out to pose, pandemonium broke loose. The seats were a sea of loose flashbulbs, mademoiselles shrilled with delight, and the European judges, many of whom had seemed to favor slender physiques, flinched. If the audience were judging, Mike would have been right up there. He was called back for an encore, and he finished with the most muscular pose that had the weak-hearted fainting from sheer excitement. Suddenly, Vic Downs came out. Not much smaller than Mike, the cut-up Ontarian brought renewed life to an already dazed audience. Also popular were two German giants, Helmut Reidmeier and Karl Blumer. Both had big, generous bodies on the Dave Draper style, but neither had the size of Mighty Mike. So that was it. The judges chaperoned by Lud Sustrick and Dennis Stallard retired to an unspecified site to sort out the final placings. In the meantime, a blockbuster series of special exhibitions had been promised, and we all sat tense wondering what was to come. Since only a portion of the audience understood the French-speaking MC, a great buzz of astonishment rose as a new superstar shaped up in the wings. He strode to the podium, and his audience hysteria made it impossible for anyone to hear his name announced. In 50 languages, only one thought was expressed. Who is this fantastic bodybuilder? He stood about 5'5", dark-hued, with arms at least 20 inches, and he whipped through difficult poses with the confidence and poise of a man who should be a Mr. Universe or Mr. Olympia. The density of his back looked capable of shielding a battleship. Lats and shoulders seemed otherworldly, and indeed many spectators thought they were hallucinating. As he left, half the crowd sat stupefied, stunned too deeply to applaud. The remainder went berserk with kudos, and we all asked, why wasn't this new face in the amateur Mr. Universe just presented? It wasn't until breathless moments later we realized he couldn't be. We were marveling at a new, super-saturated, unrecognizable Francisco Colombo in exhibition. A sure winner had he competed. Colombo is no less than the third best-built man alive, and the other two were about to appear. Officer Oliva makes an unexpected appearance. Sergio Oliva, recently appointed to the Chicago Police Department, filed an application to enter the Mr. Olympia show in July. Naturally, it was accepted. But when he made known his intentions to enter a non-sanctioned contest, his IFBB application was returned. Ben Weider pleaded with Sergio not to disqualify himself by entering this unsanctioned event. Even Arnold Schwarzenegger, begging for competition, told Sergio 6 weeks in advance that the IFBB would not let him in. But Oliva, prodded by his patron, Arthur Jones of Florida, would not listen. He went to London and was refused at Paris. Heartbroken, Sergio did not realize the now official status of the IFBB demanded it bar him. Oliva was very steamed up to appear before this muscle-hungry crowd in any capacity, however. He pleaded to go on as an exhibitor, and after some deliberation, the request was granted only after sending a letter of apology to the IFBB Congress. And what a performance he gave. No matter how often one sees Sergio, the reaction must always be the same. Absolute amazement. He tore the place apart. His magnetism and charisma even exceeds Arnold's. He makes fans on cue in the tradition of Grimmick, Scott, and Reeves, for he is a physique buff's dream. He provides more than just an incredible body and posing display. He is an indescribable, complete show in himself and awed the fans from start to finish. Sergio was in as good a shape as I've ever seen him, but he makes too many concessions to bulk madness. Apparently, he refuses to train properly because a lack of muscle density holds him back from being totally unstoppable. Arnold and Colombo are definitely in his class. With greater density to complement his awesome size, shape, and proportion, Oliva would be peerless. If Sergio would hit California this summer and pick up some tips from Joe Weider, who originally brought him to prominence, he might easily regain Mr. Olympia in 1972. Only in the Mr. Olympia event did this fantastic night falter. Defending champ Arnold Schwarzenegger charged through his paces unopposed. Without Sergio or Colombo breathing down his broad back, Arnold appeared relaxed. He was far superior to his 1970 shape to this viewer, meaning ultra fantastic, and only direct comparisons with the others would have determined the best-built man of all time. The fans wanted the great pose-down three, but gladly settled for Arnold solo. Maybe next year. With a ton and a half of trophies dominating the foreground and nearly 6 tons of biceps, pecs, and quads to the rear, the stage was set for an all-exciting award ceremony. Mr. Universe 1971 was soon to be named. There were no surprises in the small category. Diana from Holland was the popular favorite. A big gasp came from the assembled multitudes when it was announced that Mike Katz did no better than third place in the tall man's class. This brought some boos from the seats, which Hart and Mike would or could hardly believe the decision. However, when Reidmeier and Bloomer were called to receive their second and first place trophies, respectively, the audience cheered enthusiastically, showing they couldn't have been at too much variance with the judges. Any suppressed disapproval with the Cats placing came to life in the next announcement. It was the most vociferous display of anger I have ever seen from a physique audience. Albert Beckles was called for number two award in the medium height class, and the jeers started immediately. When moments later, Ahmet Danulu was named the winner, the jeers increased. But even the judges were surprised, as most thought Beckles won. Instead of using the pure point system, the judges committee decided to test a new method, which called up for 4 first places out of 7, which would automatically name the winner. When it became apparent that this method produced improper results, President Ben Weider called for an emergency judges session, which approved the use of the pure point system. Beckles joined Diana and Bloomer in the final round, and the fans gave Anulu a great hand, as he was allowed to enter too. The prompt action of the IFBB Executive Council and judging panel impressed everyone, and the audience sat bolt upright, as they knew the final decision would be thrilling and fair. To ensure this, the judges were reshuffled, and the final group of judges included Mayor M. Abu Baker from Malaysia, V. Fiala from Czechoslovakia, Kees van Velden from the Netherlands, Julian Bloomhart from Belgium, Awanis Yassan from Iraq, Mastifa Hetzi from Egypt, and Bob Heiss from the USA. There were no judges from any finalist country. The 4 posed on stage in front of the audience for all they were worth, and any one of them would have made a worthy winner. Unfortunately, many are called, but few, and one in this IFBB case, are chosen. And this time, the judges were nearly unanimous in their deliberations. Anulu was good, but he didn't quite cut the mustard, and he copped 4th. Diana made a remarkable start to his first major international fete, placing 3rd. Bloomer, another novice to the big time, took the 6-foot second-place trophy back to his Fräuleins. And when all the shouting was over, the winner, Monsieur Universe 1971, was the man who made it to the finals because of the fairness and flexibility of IFBB officialdom, the great Albert Beckles of England. In the team standings, Germany had the best overall score with 12 points, America was 2nd at 8, and England and Holland tied for 3rd with 7 each. America's decline can be attributed to the stubbornness of Ken Waller and Frank Zane, who were competing in the Navajo show and thereby disqualifying themselves from entering the event.
These disbarments and Columbos and calendars are for 1 year each. We hope the Americans will obey the regulations to give us a better shot in 1972. Next year, the Mr. Universe pageant moves 6,000 miles east from Paris to Baghdad, one of the few cities to rival the French capital as historically and aesthetically appropriate for a meeting of great physiques. Baghdad, and several millennia older than Paris, and archaeologists call it the cradle of all civilization. We will be there to see what the emerging third world nations of the East, Orient, and Africa have to throw at our Western heroes. We suspect the traditional stars will hang on for a few more years, but as IFBB-style bodybuilding prospers worldwide, and as the great Mr. Universe contest, now wisely freed from its restrictive base in New York, travels to all five continents, I would not bet on North Americans and Europeans forever. The Paris show proved this. No country has a lock up on great physiques, and all of the world's greatest physiques belong and hopefully will appear as the spectacular Mr. Universe contest. Bonsoir, messieurs. All right, so that was the 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe. And real quickly, here's the results. In the tall class, Carl Blumer from Germany was first. Helmut Reidmeier from Germany was second. Mike Katz, as they mentioned, was third. Francois Labrador from France was fourth. And Vic Downs from Canada was fifth. In the medium height class, Albert Beckles from England was first. Ahmet Anulu from Turkey was second. Ed Corney from the USA was third. Abbas El Hindwadi from Iraq was fourth. And then Serge Jacobs from Belgium was fifth. And then in the short class, Giuseppe Diana from the Netherlands was first. Renato Bertagna from Italy was second. Hubert Clemens from Belgium was third. Talib Shahab from Iraq was fourth. And Tony Lamouche from France was fifth. And in the final round, Albert Beckles was first, Carl Blumer second, Giuseppe Diana third, and Ahmet Anulu was in fourth. All right, so that is it. And, of course, Ed Corney, who was third in the class, went on to win the Mr. Universe the next year, and Mike Katz won his class as well. So that's interesting. They were both third in their classes in 1971, and then in 1972, they both won their classes, and Ed Corney won the overall, which was his first real big victory. And this was, of course, was the contest that was covered by Pumping Iron. And Ed Corney was featured on the cover of Pumping Iron from that 1972 Mr. Universe stage. So that is a very interesting article. And again, what a shame that Arnold did not compete in that NABBA Universe. And what a real shame that Sergio was not allowed to compete against Arnold. And he was right there and he was in great shape in that Mr. Olympia contest. All right. That's all we got. Next week, we will be back probably with Jerry Branham for our review of 1981, where we will probably talk about the AAU Mr. America contest, which was won by Tim Belknap, and maybe the NABBA Mr. Universe, and probably also the 1981 Mr. Olympia, which was probably the most controversial Mr. Olympia ever, even exceeding the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So that will all be next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care of yourself, guys, out there. Have a great, happy new year, and we will see you next week. Take care.